Greetings and welcome into this edition of ESPN FC. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Plenty to get to in the show. We're going to look ahead to Friday's showdown between Manchester United and Spurs. Does Ole Gunnar Solskjaer have to get United into the Champions League to save his job? Danny Higginbottom, Stevie Nicol will be by to discuss that. Plus, the reaction. Timo Werner to Chelsea is official. It's announced. And Leipzig are in a Champions League lurch. But we start in Spain. La Liga, where Real Madrid started the day 5 points back of Barcelona. They clawed that right back to two thanks to a 3-0 victory over Valencia. Karim Benzema with two goals. Eden Hazard, an assist on one. Marco Asensio coming off the bench. Long injury layoff. He gets the second goal. Also of note, Real Sociedad 2-0 to Alaves. That means Atletico Madrid hangs on to the fourth and final Champions League spot in Spain. For more, we welcome in Frank Leboeuf, Alejandro Moreno, and Sid Lowe. Frank, I'll start with you. What did you make of the Real Madrid performance with a specific eye on Eden Hazard?
That was a pleasant game to watch. Of course, you know, the rhythm and the pace of the game is not there yet because the players need to be physically more updated, let's say. But it was a pleasant game with two teams who tries to play, with a Valencian team who, in fact, I think dominated the first half and should have scored with Rodrigo when he hit the post. But after, I think they got very tired in the second half. There was two very awkward changes and substitution from Celades, who wanted to put two strikers and conceded a goal like 30 seconds after that those substitutions. But overall, I think it was a serious game from the Real Madrid team. And pleased to see Eden Hazard giving an assist to Karim Benzema. And I saw a fantastic third goal from Karim Benzema, who is capable of doing such beautiful things. So, a deserving, I would say, victory for Real Madrid. And, yeah, good hopes for Eden Hazard, who is getting fitter and fitter game after game.
Ale, since the restart, our second look at Real Madrid, what'd you make of it?
Well, this was a dangerous game for Real Madrid because even though Valencia have been underperforming and underwhelming throughout the course of the season, they have enough talent that on a given night they can give you trouble. And there was a turning point in the game here where VAR overturns a goal by Rodrigo Moreno, correctly so, and people will argue, well, it was just inches. Well, if you're inches offside, it's offside, that's it. It's black and white, and we move on with our lives. It's clearly an offside position, given the technology that is available to us. So there's no point in arguing that. However, had Valencia scored that goal and actually that goal had stood, it may have changed the way that the game went. Real Madrid continued to push forward. They had most of the possession. I thought that from Eden Hazard was, for long periods of time, a largely ineffective game. However, a nice little combination with Karim Benzema ends up in the first goal coming off on the turnover of one of those strikers that came in that Frank just alluded to, and Kevin Gamero passes the ball back into an area in which then Karim Benzema and Eden Hazard are able to combine and they score the opening goal. I think another key moment in the game, if you're into the romanticism of the game and the good feels or the feel good story, you have to talk about Marco Asensio that comes on the field after tearing his ACL and having been as out of the game as long as he has been. His first touch on the ball is a goal. And then the third goal by Karim Benzema. Let me tell you something. That first touch up and over the defender and then the volley that followed was some kind of delicious. And I once again, I mentioned this again following the match against Eibar, and I'll say this again. We are talking about Karim Benzema as the key player in the attack for Real Madrid, whereas you're expecting something more from Vinicius or something more from Eden Hazard or Gareth Bale or whoever is playing in that front line. It's still all about Karim Benzema, and he's still delivering for Real Madrid.
Sid, it's true, isn't it? At the end of the day, the brace and the golazo at the end from Benzema.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm with Ali as well in terms of the thing that you come away from this game with is the sense of happiness and joy and relief for Marco Asensio, having been out for 11 months. He comes back on the pitch and he scores after 31 minutes. But then even that gets overshadowed by the quality of that second Benzema goal. And just the touch is extraordinary. And obviously, look, I say this as someone who doesn't play the game. So I feel like I kind of want to throw this back to Frank and Ali to ask them from a professional's perspective just how difficult it is to do what Benzema did, because the first touch is brilliant, but it does force him to shift his body backwards, and he seems to do it so quickly and so smoothly that I watched it again and again, and every time I watched it back, it seemed to be even better than the time before.
Ale, a high-end finish, yeah?
Yeah, the touch by Marco Asensio to Karim Benzema, even though was the right decision of Marco Asensio, it goes up to the hip of Karim Benzema, and somehow he's able to get that first touch open over the defender, and in one fluid motion, without breaking stride, fully swing with his left foot, generate the sort of power that he did, and the accuracy that he did. It is an outstanding goal, and let me tell you, Karim Benzema, for anybody who has doubted his skill set, well, whoever has indeed doubted his skill set does not understand the way to play the position as a forward. But the way that he has embraced what his role is for Real Madrid and at times sacrificed himself for the betterment of the team, in the case of whenever Cristiano Ronaldo was part of Real Madrid, but now taking on the responsibility of being the productive guy and being the guy who's going to score the important goals, he's doing that and doing that very well. Because if you look around, there isn't a whole lot of goals coming from elsewhere. It's going to be all about Karim Benzema, and so far so good for Real Madrid and Karim Benzema.
Sid, let's look ahead to Friday. Barcelona and Sevilla. Messi's coming off back-to-back 90-minute matches. Sevilla is desperate. They don't want to fall back into that Champions League battle for the fourth and final spot in the Champions League. If there was ever a banana skin match, this would seem to be it for Barcelona, right?
Yeah, and it's a very big weekend as well, because it's not just Barcelona at Sevilla, it's also Real Madrid going to Real Sociedad, who started very badly post-lockdown, but of course were the big revelation of this season. They've played wonderful football throughout the campaign. They knocked Real Madrid out of the Copa del Rey, and so that game for Barcelona is huge. I think it's huge in terms of whether or not they can put pressure on Real Madrid, and also they would have been watching tonight and at half-time thinking, right, we could well have a cushion here, and that's gone. So I think all the way through this run of games, we're going to see quite a lot of psychology playing a part, and Barcelona haven't entirely convinced yet. As you said there, Messi has played 90 minutes both times. To be honest, I'm surprised. I thought he'd be rested. I thought he'd be left fully fit and fully fresh for this game. The fact that he's played those two games, it is a surprise. And it's not, I mean, this isn't rocket science. It's not telling you anything new. But Barcelona rely on him so much that I just wonder whether at some stage they're going to have to confront that issue of whether or not they give him a break.
Frank, it's going to be their third game in 7 days. Messi about to turn 33 in a week. Can they afford to give him a break, even if they wanted to, against Sevilla?
Well, you have to, in order to get in shape and to be physically ready and make sure that you can give 100%, even when you play games behind closed door, you have to play games and games. I mean, even friendly games don't replace an official game. And players are very, and even if they are 30 or 33 years old, very pleased to be on the field and be able to get back to the business when you are in the Champions League, when you play for big clubs like Barcelona and Real Madrid, you know, because on top of it, you're going to play for international, for your country, you're going to play international games, you know that you're going to play every 3 days. So they're up to that, they're ready for that, and they want to be there because that's their life. So, I guess nobody is complaining of being on the field, even if it's hard now. But they're going to go back to their best very, very soon.
Ale, Barcelona need Messi, but they got to give him a break at some point, yeah?
Yeah, I don't doubt that Lionel Messi wants to be out on the field. But if you're beating Leganés 2-0 late in the match, maybe you give him 10 minutes here, 15 minutes there. If you're beating Mallorca 3-0 and then eventually becomes 4-0, maybe you give him 15 minutes here, 10 minutes there. And now you've now accumulated 30 minutes of rest in which you didn't put his body through stress. Now, how is that important? Well, it may not be against Sevilla, but for Barcelona, it's a big picture. So it's not only this upcoming game with Sevilla, and it's everything that it's ahead. And so the accumulation of minutes, of unnecessary minutes and unnecessary stress, is the part that worries me if I'm Lionel Messi and I'm Barcelona. If you're Messi, you're out there, you want to play, this is what you do, this is what you get paid to do, and this is what you enjoy doing. But this is when perhaps Quique Setién has to remove that decision from Messi's hand and has to be a manager, not only of the player, but a manager of the group. He's done that with the rest of the team. Messi's the only outfield player who hasn't gotten a rest in some sort of rotation other than Ter Stegen. And so if you're doing it for everybody else, well, Messi is just as important, if not more important than everybody else. So you better handle him with white gloves and take care of him and make sure that he's ready to go not only for the Sevilla game, but for the big picture, as I just mentioned. So I don't quite understand the management or mismanagement of minutes for Lionel Messi in the last couple of games, in games that you already had under control.
Barcelona, Sevilla, Manchester United, Spurs, both on the docket for tomorrow's show. Dan Thomas is back. Julian Laurent joins the crew as well. Don't miss it.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your goldfish to sing Bizet's Carmen? There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Timo Werner to Chelsea announced on Thursday. You can read more about it on our website. Transfer fee, a reported 53 million euros. Werner to join Chelsea in July. He is not sticking around for August and Leipzig's Champions League run. Of course, they are through to the quarterfinals. Joining us now on the show to discuss this further, Stevie Nicol, Danny Higginbottom. Danny, we'll start with you. Last time we had you on, Timo Werner to Chelsea was hardly even a link. How do you think he'll fit in? And most importantly, whose job do you think he'll end up taking?
Well, I think, like you quite rightly said, you know, it's come out of the blue to a certain extent with Timo Werner going to the blue of Chelsea. But it was initially looking like he was going to be going to Liverpool. I think the one thing is with Timo Werner is that people see him as an out-and-out centre-forward. But, you know, he's a player that drifts. He can play on the left-hand side, on the right-hand side. You know, he's played off bigger physical presences, the likes of Paulsen and Schick as well at Leipzig. And when I look at Chelsea, whether they choose to play the 4-3-3 or a 4-2-3-1, he can play in a number of positions. You know, I think we've seen a lot of teams now with the 4-3-3 system. You know, you can have a centre forward on the right hand side or the left hand side that inevitably end up in the centre forward position. And a lot of people are saying, well, it's going to either be Tammy Abraham or it's going to be Timo Werner. Well, I don't see that being the case. I think they can both play together. I think they can play in the same team. They could well complement each other because they are both very different players. I think when you look at Chelsea, the likes of Willian, the likes of Pedro that are going to be going, the average age of the team's coming down. So I don't think it's necessarily looking and thinking, right, whose place is he going to take? I think there will actually be a place available for him that's not actually being taken at the moment because there'll be certain individuals that will be leaving the club.
Stevie, a couple days ago on the show, Don Hutchison said if he was in Werner's shoes, he would insist on staying at Leipzig through the Champions League run. You saw it very differently, but you were looking at it from the Chelsea perspective. You never actually answered Dan's question directly. From a player's perspective, if it were you, Stevie Nicol, the most loyal guy I know, would you want to stay at Leipzig?
From a professional standpoint, you just want to go. I'm pretty sure most players, when they've decided to leave, when they've actually signed for a club and it's time to go, I think you just want to get moving on. So personally, I would probably just be happy to go. I mean, it'd be nice for everybody you've played with, and obviously he's loved at Leipzig and he wants to be loved forever and a day, but I think from a player's point of view, certainly professionally, once you've decided to move and it's all done and dusted and signed, I think you want to start moving on. So if I'm him, I go. And he is going.
Danny, what do you think?
No, I agree. I agree completely with what Stevie's saying, because I think what you've got to look at is that if he does decide that he wants to stay at Leipzig and continue through the Champions League, then that could, you know, have an effect on him for the start of the new season for Chelsea. Not just the fact of getting to know his new teammates when they're going to be coming back for pre-season, but he'll want to sell. And, you know, one of the biggest thing is, you know, Stevie will have played with a number of players that have come from other countries, and likewise I have as well. And the biggest thing for them is that the stuff on the pitch can take care of itself. But it's so important that you're settled off the pitch, because if you're not settled off the pitch, then it's very difficult then when you get on the pitch to be in the right frame of mind. So I just think from Timo Werner's perspective, you know, the sooner he's able to get to Chelsea, he can settle down. So then, you know, when the main thing that he's been signed by Chelsea is, you know, to put the ball in the back of the net, when that time comes, you know, he can hit the ground running because he's settled himself. So I have no issues whatsoever. I think a lot of the time what we hear about, you know, players not being loyal to clubs and you know, they shouldn't do that, they shouldn't do this. Well, that's football, you know, because teams are the same as well with players. And, you know, there'll be no love lost for it. You hope there'll be no hard feelings. But it's so important now for Timo Werner. He's making that move to a new league, to a new country. And the more time he's got to settle before the actual action starts taking place on the pitch, the better it'll be for him.
Right, worth noting, James Ollie, our senior writer, says that it was Werner himself who asked Leipzig to move on before the Champions League would restart. All right, speaking of Chelsea, they're in the chase for the top four. Let's take a look at the odds for those Champions League spots out of the Premier League. As you can see, Chelsea's got to be feeling pretty good. Spurs 12-1, Sheffield United 14-1. Those odds should be better, but as everybody now knows, Sheffield United robbed on Wednesday when a goal that should have been allowed wasn't. Why? Because of a failure of goal line technology. Danny, Sheffield United has been the story of the year. Can you imagine if they missed Europa or even Champions League because of these 2 points? What a scandal it would be.
Well, I think, you know, you have to look at it. Look at the fixture that they've got to come. If they'd have been, you know, if that goal had been awarded and they'd have held on and won the game, they'd have been, I think, 2 points behind Chelsea. They've still got to play Chelsea at home. Sheffield United have had an incredible season. I think when you look at the teams that are up there challenging, they're the team with the least pressure on them. You know, it was when you're looking at everything, when you're looking at technology, when you're looking at Hawkeye, nobody expected that yesterday. It was clear, you know, just from watching the game, you could see that there was no doubt about it. It had gone over the line, and no doubt about it, Chris Wilder will have been, you know, very angry and annoyed after the game, but he'll put it behind him because they do have a game coming up. But from Sheffield United's perspective, but also down at the bottom of the league as well. You know, imagine if Aston Villa end up staying up by 1 point. You know, so there's both sides of things to look at, the top of the table and the bottom. But Sheffield United will be really disappointed, especially looking back and just seeing how obvious it was.
Stevie, based on our struggles setting up for this very segment, you're probably the least surprised that technology failed, aren't you?
No, well, listen, that's what happens now and again. Technology fails. And that's why the guy in the truck should be watching the game. You know, we keep being told that, you know, referees and linesmen and all the officials at the end of the day are all football fans. Well, any football fan watching that game, whether you're doing it and getting paid for it or you're sitting in the house, could see that that ball was over the line. Now, if I'm part of the VAR team, I'm going to say, look, I know the referees... alarm didn't go off, but I thought that was over the line. I think we should check this. Was that really difficult to figure out? Instead of, well, the watch didn't go off, so it can't be in. Doesn't matter. No, sit down, lads. Don't bother. I mean, it's incredible that actually happened. We shouldn't be surprised that technology, for once, didn't do its job, because sometimes technology goes wrong, but for the human eye and for the guy in charge of it all sitting in the truck, no, you can't miss that.
I think the frustrating thing as well is that it's still the same phase of play. You know, it's the same phase of play. You know, the ball hasn't gone out of play. So, like Stevie's quite rightly said, you know, you have VAR and you have AVAR. You have the assistant VAR in there who can take over the live game, whilst the main VAR individual is saying, right, I need to have a look at this. Even just say to the referee, you know, we're not too sure about this. Can we go and have a look at it? Can we go over to, you know, a pitch side monitor and have a look? Because there's three people that you can look at here. Well, obviously, there's Hawkeye, there's VAR, and there's even the assistant referee who's running the line. Because if he's in the correct position, there's no reason why he's not in the correct position, because it comes from a set piece. So he's not trying to catch up with play. You can see quite clearly, you know, that the ball has gone behind the line, to the point where Newland, the goalkeeper, is near enough touching the post with the ball behind the post. So, you know, there shouldn't really be any excuses for that. You know, I know Hawkeye have come out and said, well, I think something like it's the first time that it's happened in 9,000 games or something silly like that, but it shouldn't happen. And if it does happen where Hawkeye doesn't happen to work, for an instance, then there's enough people and there's enough technology around that shouldn't allow that to happen.
Danny, elsewhere on Wednesday, City rolled Arsenal pretty easily. As we take a look at the Champions League odds, right now they're sandwiched between Bayern Munich, who are the overall favorites, and Barcelona. Is that where City should be as far as Champions League favorites?
It's an interesting one, because I think what you've got to look at, yes, the top teams that are in the Champions League, but I think what you've got to look at is the break of play. You know, when does the Bundesliga finish? The Bundesliga finishes on the 27th of June, I think, and then the Champions League doesn't start again until the 7th of August. La Liga is the 19th of July, and the Premier League is the 26th of July. So it's okay saying that Bayern Munich, yes, you know, they are the favourites, but how are they going to deal with this space? You know, they've just had a relatively long break now whilst everything was trying to get back to normal in terms of the football side of things, and they're going to go into another long break as well. Whereas if you look at a team like Manchester City, you know, their break's not going to be that long after the Premier League is finished, so that could actually work in their favour. And I think when Guardiola was brought to the club, they'd won the Premier League before. He was brought in to win the Champions League. I think it's as simple as that. And I think if he leaves without winning the Champions League, there will be a real sense of disappointment, because the manager is in the place that he's got at his disposal now.
Finally, Stevie, I got to ask you about David Luiz. What do you make of the reports that Arsenal are still considering that contract extension after Wednesday's performance?
Well, I guess it's good news for all the other teams, pretty much. have a look at your fixture list and then hope that he's playing centre-back whenever you trot out to play them. I mean, the truth is, this is not something new that we're talking about. This is David Luiz, you know. He, at times, can be really good, particularly with the ball at his feet. Unfortunately, he's usually pretty bad rather than pretty good, and he is a mistake waiting to happen. In the profession, that's how we sort of categorise players, particularly when you're playing against them. You know, the coach will always say, hey, watch him, because he's always got a mistake in him. And that's with David Luiz. Great at times, horrendous at other times, so you're not quite sure what you're getting. So, for all the other sides in the Premier League, good news. Maybe not good news for Arsenal fans.
Whether he stays at Arsenal or moves on, we'll be all over it over on the website. Make sure to bookmark the Transfer Talk portion of ESPNFC.com. As mentioned, the race for the top four in the Premier League is tight, especially for those on the outside looking in. Manchester United in fifth, Spurs in eighth. They'll meet on Friday, separated by just 4 points in the table. And as you see Friday's odds, the bookmakers don't see much separation between the two sides either. Still with us, Danny and Stevie. Danny, I'll start with you. Spurs are getting everybody back. Sissoko, Son, Kane. And yet before the stoppage, they were dreadful. How much confidence do you have in a Mourinho turnaround?
I think the players that you just mentioned coming back, I think, is huge for them. I think if you look at Harry Kane, for example, you know, the way that Mourinho started when he first came in, you know, he's the focal point of the team. And what Tottenham did and what Mourinho likes to do quite often is allow the opposition to have the ball. And that worked really well for Tottenham in the opening stages while Harry Kane was fit. They would sit deep, and then when they won the ball back, the likes of Alderweireld, Vertonghen, you know, very good on the ball, they would beat any press from the opposition. And the way they were able to beat that was play the ball up to Harry Kane, who is one of the best centre forwards with his back to goal. And then the likes of Dele Alli, who started unbelievably well under Mourinho, you know, he was getting close to Harry Kane, the likes of Son, the likes of Lucas Moura. But then that whole dynamic of the team changed when Harry Kane got injured. Tottenham continued to play the same way, but they had to play with either Lucas Moura, even Dele Alli or Son as the front man. And while they do have the pace, what they don't have is the hold-up ability of Harry Kane. So what would happen is that the balls were being played very long, and the lone centre forward would find himself very isolated, and he wasn't getting any support from the midfield. So I think Harry Kane coming back just changes the whole dynamics of this Tottenham team, and Mourinho will be grateful that he's back, but I think optimistic as well for the rest of the season.
Stevie, Dele Alli suspended. Other than that, everybody's back for Mourinho. No excuses now, yeah?
Do you know what? That little picture Danny painted is of the best version of Tottenham. The problem is, when was the last time we saw the best version of Tottenham? You're probably going back to the semi-final of the Champions League, which seems like a million miles away. So, they've got talent. Certainly when they're on their game, they're a team to be reckoned with. But the fact is, they haven't been. Even though they've had some wins under Mourinho, it hasn't exactly been great to watch. Listen, yes, they've got everybody back. But it's one thing having the names on a team sheet. It's another one to perform. So I'm not quite as confident that this Tottenham side can just turn round, even though they're at home, and start producing.
Danny, other side of this, Manchester United, it's pretty clear. Obvious question, if Paul Pogba's fit, do you start him?
I do. You know, I would start him. I think, obviously, he does get a lot of criticism going his way, which you can understand some of. And I think it's probably the fact from United supporters, the ability that he does have and just shown on a more consistent basis. I think, obviously, since he's been injured, Fernandes has come in and done incredibly well. He's hit the ground running. And I think that can only benefit Paul Pogba. I think one of the situations that Manchester United have had when Paul Pogba was playing without any other playmakers around on the pitch, he was expected to do everything. Let's not forget, this is a player that got the most assists for Manchester United last season, got the most goals for Manchester United last season, and was still criticised. And I think when he first came from Juventus, he was seen as a player that was a box-to-box midfielder. Now, I don't believe, Stephen may disagree, but I don't believe there's such a thing now as box-to-box midfielders, because the game is far too quick, it's far too intense, and you're either a defensive midfielder that can dictate from deeper, or you're an attacking midfielder. And I just think that now what can happen is, from United's perspective, their biggest problem in recent years has been when teams have played against them and sat back. United haven't been able to break down the lesser teams. They've had no problems against most of the big teams because they can play on the counter-attack. Now, the added incentive now for Manchester United is that they have two playmakers in the team. So the opposition midfield can get caught between a rock and a hard place. Do they go and stop Pogba? Well, if they try and stop Pogba, who will probably be playing deeper than Fernandes, then you leave Fernandes in space. If you go and stop Fernandes, then you leave Pogba with more space. So it could work out really well for Manchester United. And obviously Marcus Rashford coming back as well. United are one of, you know, a few teams that could actually be coming back into this situation stronger than what they finished, although they had some outstanding results.
Danny, it's a decision, as you mentioned, for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. What is your opinion? Do you think he's got to get this team into Champions League to hang on to the job for another year?
No, I don't think so. I think that would be very, very harsh. I think when I look at Solskjaer, you judge your manager, yes, on the results, but you also judge him on the players that he's brought in. Harry Maguire has now been made captain, he's done really well. Wan-Bissaka, who's improving all the time as an attacking fullback. Dan James, who we know is going to be a good player. And Fernandes as well, he's been absolutely outstanding. But not just that, look at the players that have matured. Look at the players that have benefited since Solskjaer's come in. Rashford's gone up another level. Martial's gone up another level. McTominay, Fred, Matic has now found himself again. Luke Shaw. So, you know, he's had, basically two proper transfer windows when he's been able to make his mark. And I think the problem is at United. First of all, the question marks, which I hear so often, are, well, what Solskjaer ever won in the game to be given and afforded time at Manchester United? Well, Mourinho and Van Gaal won a lot of things, near enough everything that you can win domestically, but they couldn't get it right. Now, with Solskjaer, if you get rid of him again, then you're just talking about an overturn of a huge amount of players. There's players there from five managers now. It can't continue. So for me, you have to give Solskjaer the opportunity. Things are getting better. There's no doubt about it. Give him the opportunity, give him the money, and let him have some continuity. Because without continuity, you have nothing.
Stevie, real quick, Champions League expectations too harsh for Manchester United and Solskjaer?
Well, they might be lucky because Man City pretty much look as though they're going to get chucked out. Again, Dan, that was a great picture you painted. All these fantastic players coming through. Daniel James hasn't scored a goal since when? I don't know. An interesting thing for me is, how is Pogba playing going to affect the dynamic of this team? Because this team was floundering before Bruno Fernandes came. He absolutely took over. It was all about him. What's going to happen to this team now? So, listen, because of Man City getting probably chucked out, it means that United could be in there. But I'll tell you what, are you really going to put your mortgage on United getting into the Champions League? I'm not.
From my perspective, when you ask the question, if they don't make the Champions League, should Ole Gunnar Solskjaer lose his job, then 100% he shouldn't, because The problem is with United, what they've done over years, and it's been a huge issue for them, they've brought good players in, which have failed, and not necessarily down to themselves, but they've been brought in, but then there's been no role for them in the team. Solskjaer, with his transfers so far, he's gone for younger players, he's gone for players that are hungry, he's gone for players that fit the way that he wants to play. So I look at it and I think to myself, right, are we seeing progression? And I think we are seeing progression. I think you can have with Pogba and Fernandes
is two players.
Obviously, a playmaker in a deeper position, one in a higher position, that can actually make extra time and space for each other.
I'm going to put money on United after that, definitely.
We'll leave it there for now. We'll pick this up in extra time. Danny and Stevie are back. I'm sure we'll continue the United Spurs preview. We'll also figure out our right from our left when the boys join us on extra time.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
The great thing about facts, they're proven. Like the fact that crude oil contains impurities. Or that base oil made from natural gas is 99.5% free of impurities. And the fact that Pennzoil is the first synthetic motor oil made from natural gas, not crude oil. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil. Based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30.
Right then, that's all the time for today's edition of ESPN FC. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Thanks for watching. Thanks to everyone who was involved in today's show. Sid Lowe, Ale Moreno, Frank LaBeouf, and the two guys who are the stars of Extra Time starting now, Stevie Nichol and Danny Higginbottom. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into this edition of ESPN FC Extra Time. I'm Sebastian Salazar. We got Danny Higginbottom. We got Stevie Nichol, and we have your questions off of Twitter. The first one, so timely. Is David Luiz the most overrated defender of all time? Stevie, overrated, not the word I would have chosen.
I don't think he's overrated because we all know that he's an accident waiting to happen. The surprising thing is that somebody keeps playing him in a position where he has a lot of responsibility on his shoulders to A, not make mistakes, and be responsible. And his biggest problem is that sometimes he's very irresponsible in his challenges and he makes mistakes. So the question should be, who keeps playing him in that position?
Danny, were either of you cheated? This one's for you. Either of you cheated out of winning a game such as Sheffield United was on Wednesday?
I probably go back a little bit in a different way. I remember when I was at Southampton and we went through to the last game of the season and we were playing Manchester United at home and I think we needed a draw or possibly a win to stay up. And our rivals at the time down at the bottom of the league were West Brom and they were playing our local rivals, Portsmouth. And Portsmouth went there and the Portsmouth fans were singing and celebrating every time West Brom scored. And West Brom won the game, we lost. And we ended up going down, but the Portsmouth fans were celebrating in that situation. So that was a real hard one to take. But I would say that that's probably the closest we've come where we just felt really unjust because, you know, you had Portsmouth fans celebrating West Brom beating them.
Mason Mount or Christian Pulisic, who would link up perfectly with Werner and Ziyech up front at Chelsea? Stevie?
Mason Mount. It's a pretty easy answer. Because
the Americans are going to be mad, Stevie. The Americans are going to be mad.
Well, I'm not here to keep people happy. I'm here to answer the question. If you don't want me to answer the question properly, anybody, then don't ask the question. Listen, the truth is, nobody knows the two of these players better than Frank Lampard. And Frank Lampard, in a choice of picking Mason Mount or Pulisic, is going to pick Mason Mount. That is not in question. So I'm going to go with Frank Lampard. You know, Mason Mount is way, way quicker. His name's put on the team sheet way before Christian Pulisic. That's just a fact. So regardless of where he comes from, the truth is, between the two of them, it's Mason Mount.
What number penalty did you take in penalty shootouts? What would have been your ideal position in the penalty lineup? Danny?
Oof. I was fortunate enough when I played, I was a penalty taker, and I didn't take that many, maybe 10 or 12, but I didn't miss one. But I think as a defender, every now and then you want the glory, so possibly the fifth penalty to maybe win it. So yeah, for defenders to get a little bit of glory for a change.
Stevie, fifth penalty for you?
I actually have taken the first and the fifth. I ballooned the first one when I took it first over the crossbar, and when I took the last one, I stuck it in the back of the net. So go figure.
Ah, boy, here we go. It just always comes up in extra time, doesn't it? Danny, would a throw-in coach have improved your Stoke City side on the field, or was Rory Delap the authority figure in that department?
He's gone down in legendary status because of it. It wouldn't have made any difference. I actually remember the specific moment because I played with Rory at Derby, then I was with him at Southampton. And when he came to Stoke, he got injured. And Tony Pulis loved to do set pieces before a game. And he just wanted to basically take throw-ins, but, you know, just see how far somebody could get it. And Rory was injured, so our manager had just said, right, the opposition have got a long throw, Rory, so just throw some in. And he expected him to just throw, you know, over his head. But he didn't do it. He took it like a normal throw-in. And I've never seen a manager's eyes light up like Tony Pulis's did. And it goes down, you know, in folklore in Stoke. And, you know, that was the beginning of things. Every time we got a corner at home, it felt like, you know, we were going to score a goal. And I remember playing against Hull City at home, and the goalkeeper put the ball out for a corner instead of giving us a throw, which was incredible to see. But no, we just knew when Rory got the ball, it wasn't so much the distance, it was the trajectory and the pace when he threw the ball and where it was going. So it was just a case of when he picked the ball up, we knew exactly where he was putting it, and everybody was accustomed to that.
Stevie, can the Man City attack destroy Bayern Munich's defence?
Can the Man City's attack what?
Destroy is the question. Bayern Munich's defence.
Absolutely. Yeah, no question. Yeah, they Bayern's defence, particularly since the restart of the Bundesliga, hasn't particularly been tested. You know, Boateng, no question, is past his best. Manuel Neuer, I think, is past his best. You know, Davies at left back, Alphonso Davies, is better going forward. He gets away with a lot of things because of his pace defensively, but I think he still has what to do on his 1v1s. And Pavard is a good defender. But Manchester City, at the best, with the front three, absolutely could terrorise Bayern. They could, no question.
Danny, who's your favourite ever teammate? Paul wants to know.
I'm going to go back to Rory Delap. And I was with him at Derby, was with him at Southampton, and was with him at Stoke. And just a real good guy on and off the pitch. And I think, obviously, you know, the status that he got with his throw-in, I think sometimes that undermined just how good a player he was. He was a fantastic player, and he's a really good family friend now. So I would say Rory Delap for that instance, on and off the pitch.
Last question goes to Stevie. Stevie, you were such a versatile player back in your day. Have you ever forgotten which position you were playing in a particular game? For example, straying to the right side of the pitch when you were actually filling in at left back.
No. Absolutely not.
After yesterday's extra time, you never know.
Let me tell you something, though. I have coached some players who, when you ask them to do a certain job, absolutely do the complete opposite thing, and you absolutely can't figure it out. I took an MLS All-Star team to play in the Bernabeu against Real Madrid. This was when it was the Galacticos. And I brought a player on at half-time who was known to not be the brightest. And I got him on the board and I showed him in a diagram where I wanted him at corners against. And it was right on the outside of our penalty box where the semicircle is. I said, right, I want you standing right there so that if the ball drops, then you can clear it or you can affect the play. Right on the edge of our box, right? The first corner Real Madrid get, he's standing on the halfway line on the right wing. I couldn't believe my eyes, and I'm screaming at him, and he's looking at me as if to say, what's he on about? Anyway, I've never done it myself, but this particular player, that's exactly what he did.
The typing you heard there was me frantically searching for the box score of that match, Stevie, so I could see who you subbed on at the half. I haven't found it yet, but I'll look for it as soon as I can and tweet it. Maybe they'll talk about it on tomorrow's show. Jules is back, so is Dan Thomas. Plenty to look forward to on Friday as the guys get you set for Barcelona against Sevilla. They'll recap that and everything coming up on the weekend.